could the simple act of, you know, sorting your sock drawer actually change your career path or maybe fundamentally alter how you approach major life decisions?
It sounds almost ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah, like a self-help cliche maybe gone a bit too far. But today we're going to unpack this pretty radical claim that tidying up can be genuinely life-changing.
Welcome to the deep dive. So our source material today is really looking at the philosophy of Marie Kondo, specifically her global phenomenon, the life-changing magic of tidying up.
Right.
And this isn't just a book about, like, folding laundry better. It's actually a systematic guide to achieving some deep personal transformation. Mm. It's just kind of disguised as a manual for decluttering.
Okay, so our mission is clear then. We're going beyond the viral videos, the folding methods everyone knows. We're really trying to extract the psychological stuff, the philosophical ideas, and the practical nuts and bolts.
Mm-hmm.
Basically explaining why this system seems to get such dramatic results for people. We're giving you the shortcut to understanding the power behind KonMari.
And the core idea is pretty radical. It's that doing this single, really concentrated decluttering event, if you do it precisely her way, it can permanently shift your mindset, your habits, and honestly, your whole life trajectory.
Mm.
It's about getting to a level of clarity and intentionality that you just can't reach by doing little bits here and there.
Okay, let's start with Marie Kondo herself.
Yeah.
Where does this all come from? This isn't someone who just, like, picked up a hobby recently.
Not at all.
Her expertise apparently comes from this lifelong, almost spiritual passion for tidying. It started when she was just 5 years old.
Five. Yeah. And she was already working as a full-time organizing consultant by the time she was 19.
No.
But what's really essential to get is that her perspective isn't just about efficiency. It's philosophical. The source material points out her deep connection to Japanese culture, Shinto beliefs.
Right. The idea that objects have energy.
Exactly. That inanimate objects possess energy, maybe even a spirit, and deserve respect. And that influence is why her method is so full of reverence and gratitude towards your things.
And that foundation leads to this, well, this jaw-dropping claim in the book, a 100% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
The sources say none of her clients relapse into clutter after going through the full method. Wait, 100%. That feels ambitious.
It does sound like hyperbole, yeah. But she argues the success is guaranteed because the process itself is designed as this one-time total reset, not a continuous struggle.
Okay.
She believes conventional methods fail precisely because they're flawed. You know, most of us try to tidy a little each day. Maybe.
Like when we do it room by room, right? Like, I'll tackle the bedroom this weekend.
Exactly. And what's her critique of that?
She calls those methods patchwork. Basically, they fail because you never actually face the total volume of your stuff that's scattered all over the house.
Right. So you might clear one bedroom.
Yeah. But if you don't confront the fact that you own, I don't know, five times the amount of clothes you actually need or wear,
that clutter just creeps back in. It's the rebound effect. You haven't actually changed your relationship with your stuff.
That makes perfect sense. So if regular tidying is like putting a Band-Aid on a broken leg, what's the big KonMari intervention that's supposed to create this permanent change?
Okay, so the KonMari counter rule is really decisive. Effective tidying must be done as a single special event.
One big go.
One big go in a relatively short period.
Mm-hmm.
And critically, strictly by category, not by location.
Okay, not room by room.
No. And this dramatic, concentrated effort, she calls it the tidying festival. That's what creates the lasting mindset shift. That's what breaks the cycle of just accumulating stuff and then bouncing back.
In this category approach, that brings us right to the core idea, the phrase everyone knows, asking, does this spark joy?
That's it. This is the absolute core principle. And it's where the intuition training really starts. When you hold an item, the question isn't logical. It's not, is this useful or did this cost a lot?
It's a feeling.
It's an intuitive, almost physical check. Like, does holding this object literally make you feel energized, happy, positive, a lift? If yes, you keep it. If not, you genuinely thank it for its service and you let it go.
The really crucial psychological shift here seems to be the reframe. Usually when we think about decluttering, it feels like deprivation, you know, what do I have to give up?
Right, sacrifice.
But the KonMari process flips that. It's framed positively. It's about choosing what to keep, actively curating the life you want. You're basically designing your ideal environment.
And that intense focus on choice, it forces you or the client to confront the psychological reasons behind the clutter in the first place.
Okay, what are those?
Well, if you look at the big picture, the source material says there are really only two main reasons we hold on to things we don't actually need or love.
Two reasons.
Yeah. One, an attachment to the past. That could be nostalgia or maybe guilt over a gift someone gave you.
Uh-huh. Or two.
Or two. Mm-hmm. A fear for the future. That anxiety wrapped up in the classic, oh, but I might need it someday, pile.
The just-in-case stuff.
Exactly. So she's not just giving you a filing system. She's basically asking you to confront your emotional baggage, your past anxieties, and your future fears.
Which makes the stakes way higher. And that explains why that quote is so powerful. The question of what you want to own is actually the question of how you want to live your life.
Yeah, that quote really lifts tidying from just a chore to... well, an act of self-discovery. Mm. Your physical choices start reflecting your deepest values and what you aspire to.
So every time you touch something and decide...
you're literally voting for the kind of life you want to live by choosing only the items that actively support that vision.
Okay, let's get practical. The step-by-step process. You said the success depends entirely on following a very specific order.
Non-negotiable. Absolutely. You have to start with the easier stuff and systematically work your way towards the emotional minefields.
Makes sense. Build momentum.
Precisely. It's designed to build that decision-making muscle, as she calls it. So the categories are tackled in this strict order. First, clothes. Second, books. Third, papers. Oh. Fourth is kimono, that's basically miscellany, all the other stuff. And then dead last, number five, sentimental items.
Right. Clothes first. Why clothes?
They usually have the least emotional charge tied to them compared to photos or old letters. So it's easier to practice that spark joy test without getting overwhelmed right away.
And she insists you gather every single piece of clothing from the entire house.
Every single piece. Every closet, every drawer, under the bed, the forgotten gym bag in the car. Pile it all in one spot, usually the floor or the bed.
That sounds intense.
It is. That's the famous shock therapy. It forces you to confront the sheer volume of what you own. It's immediate, dramatic, visual proof of your abundance.
I can see how seeing that massive pile would make you realize, okay, I definitely have enough.
Exactly. And that's also where her specific techniques, like the famous vertical folding, come in. Yes, it saves space, but philosophically, storing clothes neatly, like files you can see, is about honoring them for their service.
Okay, after clothes comes books, which I know is a tough one for a lot of people, especially unread books.
Oh yeah, huge struggle. And she's incredibly disciplined about this. Her argument is quite profound, actually. She says the moment you bought the book, it basically served its purpose.
How so?
It signaled an interest you had, or maybe it gave you a little thrill just buying it.
Uh-huh.
But if it's still sitting there unread, its time has probably passed. You need to focus on the information and stories that resonate with you now. Let the others go.
Ouch. Okay. Then papers. You mentioned her ruthlessness here becomes legendary.
It really does. The basic rule is discard everything.
Whoa. Everything. That sounds terrifying. What about important documents?
Okay. It sounds harsh. And yeah, anxiety definitely spikes when people hear that. But there are exceptions. Very clear ones.
Phew. Okay. What are they?
There are only three really strict exceptions. You keep papers that are, one, currently in use, like bills you need to pay right now.
Got it.
Two, needed for a very limited time, the warranties you haven't used yet, or maybe specific project documents.
Right.
And three, things you absolutely must keep indefinitely, legal documents. Birth certificates, specific contracts, everything else. Old bank statements, manuals for gadgets you don't even own anymore.
Gone.
Discarded. And the relief people feel from ditching that mental burden is apparently instantaneous.
I can imagine. Okay, the fourth category you mentioned briefly, kimono. That's the big catch-all, right?
It is. It's often the largest category because it's basically everything else. Kitchen gadgets, CDs, DVDs, makeup, toiletries, hobby stuff, electronics. That junk drawer full of random chargers and bits.
The infamous junk drawer.
Exactly. You tackle this section after the first three because by now you're supposed to be pretty good at sensing joy. And this category is so varied, it really tests those new skills.
And then finally, sentimental items. Save for last for a very good reason, I assume.
Absolutely the crucial reason. They are the emotional minefield. Photos, old letters, keepsakes.
Yeah.
By the time you reach these, you've ideally spent hours honing your spark joy intuition. You've confronted your habit of clinging to the past through clothes, books, papers.
So you're better equipped.
You can finally approach these memories with more clarity, appreciate them deeply. And then, if they don't actually bring you active joy now, you can let them go without feeling totally paralyzed by emotion.
Okay, so the massive discarding phase is done. Then what about storage? Only after everything's sorted.
Only once the discarding is fully complete. And the philosophy here is just beautifully simple. Every single item you've chosen to keep needs a designated, simple home, a place where it belongs.
And does she recommend fancy storage systems?
Quite the opposite. The book explicitly pushes for simplicity over complex systems. Use shoeboxes. Use clear containers you already have. The point isn't to spend a fortune hiding clutter you couldn't part with.
Right.
The goal is to honor the items you did keep and make it super easy to put them back in their home so clutter doesn't rebuild.
And this whole process, this is where the real transformation, the magic, as she calls it, starts to happen beyond just a tidy house.
Exactly. When you're surrounded only by things you genuinely love and value, you gain this incredibly deep understanding of your own priorities, your passions, what really matters to you.
That makes sense.
And the source material really hammers this theme of interconnection. A cluttered, chaotic home often mirrors a cluttered, chaotic mind, you know, full of anxiety, indecision.
So tidying the physical space.
Directly creates mental clarity. It
Right.
fosters focus, peace. It essentially frees up massive amounts of mental bandwidth that was being consumed by the clutter and the decisions around it.
And that leads to the real life application that makes people call it life-changing, right? The intuition training.
Yes, that practice of asking, does this spark joy? Hundreds, maybe thousands of times with physical objects. It seriously strengthens your overall decision-making muscle.
How so?
You start applying that same intuitive filter, not just to clothes, but maybe to job opportunities that come up, or social commitments you feel obliged to do, maybe even relationships.
Wow. Okay. So it helps you define boundaries.
It leads to more authentic life choices because you've gotten crystal clear on what truly aligns with you. And we also see this show up immediately in mindful consumerism.
Ah, buying less stuff.
Pretty much. Once you've done all that hard work of curating your possessions, you naturally pause before making a new purchase. You genuinely ask yourself, will this truly spark joy? And importantly, do I have a designated home ready for it?
That resistance to impulse buying, that's fascinating. It must save people a lot of money and mental energy in the long run.
It really does. You know, the classic case study she mentions is the client totally overwhelmed by just-in-case clutter. All the spare buttons, the old packaging, the duplicates.
Yeah, the safety net stuff.
Right. And that clutter is rooted entirely in anxiety about the future. It's a lack of trust in yourself. So discarding those items actually taught clients they can handle unexpected things. They
Yeah.
can trust their own ability to cope.
Freeing them up to live more in the present.
Exactly. That realization that you don't need a physical mountain of stuff to feel secure, that might be the most profound takeaway for many people.
Okay, so if we had to summarize the most valuable lesson here for you, the listener, what would it be?
I think it's that tidying, in this KonMari sense, isn't just a continuous, dreary chore like vacuuming. It's framed as a profound one-time journey of self-discovery.
A special event.
A special event that brings lasting peace and clarity because it forces you, really forces you, to define the life you actually want to lead. And then to choose only the things that actively support that specific vision.
Okay, so you've learned how to apply the Spark Joy test to, say, clothes and papers. Now, here's maybe the provocative thought for you to take away from this deep dive. Consider the non-physical areas of your life. What digital clutter are you holding on to? What time-sucking social media connections? Or what weekly commitments are you doing purely out of fear of missing out or guilt about saying no, rather than because they bring you positive affirmation?
That's a powerful question.
What can you simply look at, acknowledge, maybe thank, and then consciously let go?
Applying that same principle broadly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the ultimate KonMari transformation, isn't it? Moving beyond just the physical stuff.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Marie Kondo's philosophy. We really hope this has given you maybe some clarity or at least food for thought on how to approach your own life and belongings with a bit more intention.
Thank you for joining us for this exploration. We'll catch you next time.